Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Block Talk Radio studio right here in the heart of Hudson County. Ladies and gentlemen, it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you the three-time, and I do say it again, the three-time award-winning politically direct. And I am New Jersey's premier journalist and top 100 Latino via the Latino Spirit online magazine, Fernando Uribe. I want to thank you all for joining us here on the 25th of March. We're still going strong in 2021, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, year three and counting here on the podcast. And so I want to thank you all for listening from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout the Garden State and, of course, to all my friends throughout the U.S. of A. Now, you can write to the show's inbox at any time, and it is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. If you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic coming up, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Now, certainly, I do answer my emails promptly. We got some great guests coming up, and obviously in the next few weeks. Certainly, I'll be telling you more about that later in the show. But again, if you want to write to the program, let me know what you like about it, what you don't like, whatever, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. And, of course, check out my own Instagram. I have a great following at Professor Fernando Uribe. All organic traffic there, so I'm happy about that. And certainly, I know many of you have come to rely on my Instagram stories, whether it's about memes, politically incorrect humor, stuff from Barstool Sports, which I love, politics, sports, pro wrestling, motivational quotes, whatever it is, folks, definitely check me out on Instagram. You'll love it. You'll get a few laughs and chuckles, and why not? We need that right now more than ever. So again, at Professor Fernando Uribe. Also, hit me up on Twitter at NoFilterUribe, and certainly I can't say enough about the feedback on Twitter. Good following there as well, so definitely you want to check me out whenever possible. And at the same time, I would say, you know, you want to definitely shoot me up a tweet there on Twitter when you can, of course. And, you know, as I said, you know, you want to be able to connect with me. You can do that on Twitter as well. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to like for all you Facebook subscribers. Please take a moment, go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. Now, a little programming note here, obviously, if you caught my little humor there, I am currently serving a 30-day Facebook suspension due to just idiots on Facebook that, I don't know, whatever, feel the need to report comments unnecessarily. And apparently, according to Fascist Book, I violated some community standards, so I'm in the process of finishing my 30-day suspension. Hopefully, in a few weeks, it'll be over with, and I'll come and I'll go back to raising hell on Facebook. But in the meantime, of course, you know, I'm still on Instagram and Twitter, and you know, I'm not quite there, as you all know. So definitely hit me up there. And folks, as a reminder, don't forget to check out Insider NJ every single day by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene anywhere in the state of New Jersey. Folks, it's always with Insider NJ. Just amazing journalism, the best columns. It starts with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro. I don't really care about his politics. I don't really care for a lot of his views, but he's an exceptional journalist. He's a great writer, so you definitely want to check him out there as well. And I have some great colleagues, Alan Steinberg, who also drives me crazy with his columns. A little too left for me, but, you know, I think, you know, Alan's great in that sense. And he's a regular on the program. Actually, he'll be on coming up in a couple of weeks, again, on the podcast. You definitely want to keep an eye out for him. Certainly, Fred Snowflack, amazing writer. I love reading his columns when they're on. Jay Lasseter, I don't really care about his politics. I don't really think highly of him. He doesn't think highly of me, but that's okay. But he's an amazing journalist, so I'll give credit where it's due, journalistically, not anywhere else. But, again, I'm part of a great team. I can't say enough about the Graham family, specifically Mike Graham and my boss, Pete O'Nellia, the general manager at Insider NJ. I mean, I know he gets a lot of headaches because of me. But, you know, I help bring in traffic. This continues to be a very reputable podcast, ladies and gentlemen, to say the very least. And, it, you know, it keeps bringing you guests that no other news program is bringing you in the state of New Jersey. So, again, I'm grateful here on the podcast, obviously. It's, you know, year three and counting. And three awards later, I must be doing something right, ladies and gentlemen, because Politically Direct is one of the more respected news programs and commentary, you know, shows here in New Jersey as it pertains to opinion journalism, which I'm as good as it gets here in the state. You know, I'm not going to be shy about that. I don't think I need to be. But certainly, you know, it's great to be working under the Insider NJ banner. So check them out, folks. Again, www.insidernj.com. Up in the right-hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button. And once you do, you will be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. And what that means is when you're checking your emails, right, and you're on your phone or on your Mac or your tablet or whatever, guess what? When you come across it, you'll see the morning intelligence briefing there. So you'll see columns, other editorials, you'll see video content. Obviously, I'm grateful to Insider NJ for their cross-promotional posts of my Monday night show, Real Talk, that I do with Eyes on NJ, again, at eyesonnj.org/real-talk. So I'm grateful to that. And again, you'll see all that and much more via Insider NJ again and the morning intelligence briefing. Folks, don't forget to like Insider NJ on Facebook. Follow them on Twitter, and, of course, remember to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder here today and every week here, again, the opinions and views expressed here and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, the staff, or our sponsors. Well, we got a great guest coming up here today, ladies and gentlemen, and one of the things I take pride in with this program, it's not just talking politics, right? It's not just having elected officials on, having fellow journalists on this program, but it's also talking to people that are relevant in New Jersey's political and legal community. And that's one of the things that I take pride in on this program, is bringing you, you know, again, those exclusives, right, that people don't get to hear on other online programs. And, you know, obviously this week will be no exception. Obviously, you know, we have a great guest come up in a few moments. But, you know, that's one of the things I really want to focus on, ladies and gentlemen, here on this show, as well as my other programs, right? My podcast on Wednesday nights with Talking to Hudson, again, blogtalkradio.com/Talking to Hudson. And also, you know, what I'm doing with Eisen and Jay live on Monday nights at 7 p.m., with Real Talk with Fernandy Uribe, again, via eisenandj.org/real-talk. And what I've wanted to do, types of guests, you know, listen, politics is my bread and butter, right? Opinion journalism is what I do. It's where I've obviously attained multiple graduate degrees in. But it's also what I do for a living as well, working in academia, working in higher education, teaching political science, teaching American government, teaching U.S. history. But it's not just about that. It's about talking about other issues that are relevant in today's political climate. And that's what I promised I would do on this show this year, is not just have elected officials, not just have candidates like I've been doing since the inception of Politically Direct in January of 2018, but to have other viable and very reputable professionals on this program talking about what's going on, not just, for example, in real estate, what's going on in the medical community. But folks, another issue that really is extremely relevant, not just this year, but really any year, and especially here in New Jersey, again, the most densely populated state in the country, is immigration. And obviously it's become a topic of national attention right now with the new administration in Washington, but also what the governor and the legislature is doing here in New Jersey. And here, and joining me here today to sort of unpackage what's going on with immigration law is renowned immigration attorney and activist, the great Carolina Teresa Curbelo, joins us here on Politically Direct. Counselor, how are you?
Good. How are you, Fernando?
I'm good. I want to give you a nice pomp and circumstance entrance here to the program. So I'm glad I was able to do that. Now, Counselor, you know, one of the things one of the reasons I wanted to get you back on the program is obviously not just what you do with your law practice, which is centered around immigration law. Obviously, there are other avenues of law that you practice. But we know immigration remains, again, a steadfast topic of discussion. We have a new administration in Washington now, obviously moving in a different direction from the previous administration. I know that upon taking office, the 46th president talked about how his immigration policies are going to differ from his predecessors. And that's, you know, plural, obviously the previous presidents, you know. With what you do with immigration law, obviously it's evolving, it's changing. Is it becoming overwhelming to sort of keep up with the new variations in immigration law?
Well, thank you, Fernando, for welcoming me on your show. With regards to the changes that we're seeing with the Biden administration, right now, the quick answer is that, you know, What we're trying to do now is the Biden administration is trying to roll back a lot of the policies that the previous administration had, and as you can imagine, they're not, you know, the Biden administration is being very careful in analyzing, you know, not only the policies that were done by the prior administration, but the impact as well. And also, I would say that, you know, given the challenges that the current administration is facing with the pandemic and now with a recent surge of unaccompanied minors at the border, I think this current administration is being careful, but a lot more, they're taking a more humane approach towards immigration policy.
All right, well, let's get to that. And I know that obviously for our audience that isn't familiar with you, with sort of the dynamic between you and I, obviously we're very good friends off the air. You're such a respected attorney in the state of New Jersey. And, you know, we talk a lot off the air about what's going on politically and obviously when it comes to immigration law. And I think that sort of a very big component here is talking about, you just referenced it, humanity, right? And the notion of that the 46th president is looking to implement policies that are more humane. We'll get to sort of the optics, right? It's been in the news cycle, some things that are being debated right now nationally, and we'll get to that later. But for our audience that maybe isn't familiar, what would you, in the most objective way possible, sort of characterize that is more humane now for the 46th president as opposed to the 45th president with policy?
So I would say it's just the rhetoric, the approach. It's the way we've been talking about immigrants. I mean, you know, look, when we say the term immigrants, you know, it encompasses, you know, a vast, enormous group. So you have within immigrants, you have folks that come here, you know, temporarily on visas. You have people that come here, you know, through, you know, obtaining visas through legal means. that stay here permanently. And then you have those category of individuals that are undocumented that may have crossed the border or have overstayed their visas. And then you have individuals that are refugees, asylum seekers. I mean, it really, there's so many categories of individuals that fall into this vast word, immigrant, as an immigrant. But say that the police administration they were anti-immigrant in their policies, that they weren't, even though they tried to distinguish, they're trying to distinguish not only, legal immigration, but also undocumented immigration. And they try to criminalize, immigrants. And so the focus hasn't been one of, really reuniting families. It's been one where it's been very antagonistic, very anti-immigrant, the previous administration. And a lot of that has been, the policies and the perception of the previous president.
Well, let's talk about perception. And again, I don't want to get overly political about this. We can do that a little bit later. But Counselor, perception is important here, right? And I think what we're seeing, we're both very active on social media. I right now cannot be. I'm still serving a 30-day Facebook suspension, but my other online platforms are active, and I'm certainly dissecting this. But when we talk about perception, I mean, it seems to be now, the news cycle is starting to scrutinize a little bit what's going on the southern border. And I think we're starting to see the perception that maybe this administration isn't being as transparent as they claim to be, right? I mean, I think we're seeing that in our news cycle, depends on what you're reading. But the bottom line is, I mean, there's a little bit of an uproar as to what's going on down there. And in terms of narrative and rhetoric when it comes to how children are being housed, and I think sometimes the narrative has changed a little bit. Are you concerned as not only an immigration attorney, but also an activist that maybe, again, it seems that we're playing politics with this issue once again? Might be a new administration, a different party in the White House, but it seems like a lot of this is being politicized too. Is that fair to say?
Well, I think you have to understand that as an immigration lawyer and as an advocate for immigrants' rights, this issue that has been ongoing at the border, even since, the Obama administration, of unaccompanied children crossing the border without their parents, and as far as their housing, their treatment, or in general, how immigrants are being treated at the border, has been an issue that immigration lawyers and advocates have been, fighting against, or basically trying to raise the issue through all previous administrations. So it didn't begin with Trump or end with Trump, or, this is something that it was prior to the previous administration. It's something that we have been trying to raise awareness. And the reality is that I would say U.S. Congress has not, address the problem of immigration. If it is the undocumented immigration that they're concerned about, they really haven't. We don't have the political capital in Washington to really want to address this issue. And I know that a lot of people are, taken aback by the images that they've seen at the border with the treatment of children, the separation of children and their parents, but this is something that, I think both parties, depending who's in power, have politicized. Right now the Republicans are, trying to, make light of the fact that there's this issue that kids, now are in cages. And, before, Democrats said the same thing about the Trump administration. I mean, really, honestly, mm-hmm. The work has to get done. Something has to get done. And if anyone is concerned about this, you have to reach out to your congressional representatives. If you are, concerned about the treatment of children, regardless of what their immigration status is. So, yes, I would say it's definitely has been politicized.
Well, I'm glad you disclosed that. I'm glad you openly sort of admitted that on the air with me, because, that's one of the more frustrating things about this discussion, right? The idea that more times than not, in every election season we see it, immigration gets politicized. It becomes almost like that football that's thrown around to score political points with either advocacy groups or within, you know, political parties per se. And I think it almost becomes exhausting, though, Counselor, because now, you know, again, it's new administration, and, you know, the optics are there where, and listen, let's be honest about it. I was just on a panel this afternoon, pre-recording for another show on someone else's program, and I just said, listen, sometimes the message, you know, gets convoluted, right? Didn't we hear the last 4 years, for example, that, you know, what's going on at the border or where kids are being housed, they're called one thing by either the liberal media or whatever, and now with the new administration, they're being called detention homes or, you know, immigrant facilities. And I think sometimes that rubs people the wrong way because it's like, wow, even the media is politicizing this, and they're doing it maybe to score political points or to be on the good side of a new administration. I think that even, I know you realize it, but I think sometimes for our audience, we lose sight of the fact that this becomes overly political and it's exhausting. Is that fair to say, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends, you know, who the network is and, you know, who's conveying the message. Look, the honest truth is if you're concerned about and you care about immigrant rights or care about children in general, human beings, you know, you're a human rights activist. All you need to do is just go to the border, the Southwest border, and see, you know, you can't enter these facilities, of course. It's very hard for even congressional representatives to get in to see how DHS is handling the, you know, operating, you know, you want to call them these camps, these facilities. However, you know, I think that if you just see the way, you know, if you can go and, you know, see how immigrants are treated at the border, you sort of get an understanding, or even just reaching out to a nonprofit, or the understanding of the magnitude of the crisis at the border. And this is something that just ebbs and flows. Like, look, I mean, what's going on there is, you know, the perception, like we talked about earlier, you know, perception. The perception right now of folks crossing the border is that we have a new president that is, you know, I would say that is, you know, has, for all appearances' sakes, is very, you know, pro-immigrant and immigrant-friendly. Friendlier than, let's say, his predecessor. And for folks that are trying to enter the United States, you know, there's hope. And for them, they find that there is hope in this administration. However, the reality is, in practice, those of us who are immigration practitioners or activists know that right now the first challenge that the Biden administration faces is really dismantling, you know, the hurdles, the walls, the invisible wall that the prior administration created. So, you know, no matter what the perception is at the border of folks crossing and their hopes that they will find, you know, the promised land here where they will be able to adjust their status or get a work visa or work authorization, the reality is, you know, is that we have a lot to work to do right now, the current administration, in dismantling the prior administration's, you know, I would say red tape or hurdles that they created.
All right, well, let's look at sort of hurdles and some red tape. And again, within your own law practice, obviously it's still very early on in the process, the new administration, you know, and certainly whether it's executive order or whatever Congress is going to do in the next few weeks and months ahead concerning this issue, it remains to be seen. But as a practitioner, per se, as someone who owns a law practice and works specifically with immigration law. I mean, I know there are other avenues of law you practice, but that's your specialization, Counselor. So, you know, what are you seeing in terms of volume? I mean, is it, I'm not trying to ask if it's profitable because that's not a question I want to ask. I mean, is it a practice of law that maybe is becoming overwhelming for you and your peers here in New Jersey? Is it still something that is, I don't want to say it's not worthwhile, of course it's worthwhile, but is it something that is still meaningful in terms of the work volume and also, you know, time of day? There's only so many hours in the day you can work, right?
So regardless of who is in the administration, what administration, you know, I'm working under, whether it was the prior or even this current administration, there will always be individuals coming to the United States the United States is always looked at as, is, you know, from the outside as, you know, a beacon of freedom, a land of opportunity. And, you know, despite the fact that we're in the middle of a pandemic, people around the world still look for the promised land. And, you know, they look to us. That the opportunities are here, the specifically the economic opportunities. Not only that, but also the political freedoms that we have. What I do mostly, which is family-based immigration, humanitarian immigration, you know, my phone continues to ring as much as it did under the prior administration. Now, I would say that the reason folks are calling me now more is because they're more comfortable now, you know, doing things like petitioning their family members. Before, it was more out of fear. Folks were trying to adjust their status, trying to defend themselves in court and immigrate before the immigration court. Now it's, you know, I think that the perception has changed, that they feel that the Biden administration, based on, you know, what the president, you know, his platform that he ran on, that there is, you know, it's going to be, you know, a lot easier to bring a relative, or that, you know, the possibility of a dreamer becoming or adjusting their status. So the business has been the same. I mean, or, you know, it just depends on what areas, specific areas of immigration are busier. But, you know, work is work, and there will always be folks coming to the United States.
Now, Counselor, we know that immigration tends to be a very polarizing concept and a topic of discussion. I think whether it's along legal lines, whether it's along socioeconomic lines, even political lines. And when I've had you on the program before, you know, we've talked about sort of an inevitable reality, and that is that oftentimes, and we'll just sort of look at New Jersey, for example, we look at the reality that there's still a generational disconnect to some extent about how we view immigration. Case in point, I'll look at the way that, you know, we have discussions with our families about immigration. I mean, we're both children of immigrants. But, you know, but I'm also conscious of the fact that the immigration laws that were in effect for my mother leaving communist Cuba and my dad leaving Colombia collectively, were very different for them 50 plus years ago when they left their respective countries. So I'm not oblivious to that, but, and we know immigration law has evolved, I mean, infinitely since then, but it seems that when talking to either family members where there maybe is a little bit of an age gap or what have you, there seems to be still a very polarizing division about immigration. And the reason I bring that up to you, obviously we talked off the air, but the bottom line is that, you know, people like my parents are not racist, they're not bigots, you know, they're not xenophobes. Obviously, they're immigrants themselves. But I think even people in my parents' age demographic look at the narrative or the rhetoric that's going on now. And the first thing that would come out of their mouths, and people just like their age demographic, would be, wow, what's going on in New Jersey? Or what's the message that one political party is conveying out there, where it seems like we just want to just give everything away or just coddle people that are here, especially illegal immigrants, right? Or undocumented immigrants, right? So that's the thing that really, I think, becomes, I think, a very divisive issue, right? And, you know, again, how do you, as someone who's also the daughter of immigrants, is, you know, coping with that as well?
So, look, I mean, you and I, Alfair, have discussed this topic, and, you know, we both, you know, and we both have, yes, as you said, we're both children of immigrants. And I think you and I come to this issue with a different perspective. Mine is one of, look, what our parents, you know, what our parents are saying now and wondering whether we're, you know, like, I'll quote you that, you know, we're coddling immigrants, mostly, and maybe in favor of, let's say, U.S. citizens or legal permanent residents. I mean, I think that the answer is, well, what does New Jersey want? What does the people of New Jersey want? And it appears to me that the people of New Jersey have spoken on this issue. And regardless of whether it's one party or other, look, we have voted for our elected representatives in Trenton, and our representatives in Trenton are representing, you know, our values, New Jersey values. And it appears that, you know, it's very clear based on the demographics, New Jersey, you know, is a very diverse state, you know, ethnically, religiously, just in the demographics alone. And from, you know, and we do have a lot of immigrants in the state, both legal and undocumented immigration. And I firmly believe that a lot of the legislation that has been passed under the current governor is in response to what we as the people of New Jersey deemed important. Now, you and I can get into the particulars. Well, why don't they, you know, deal with, you know, infrastructure issues versus immigration issues and stuff like that. But the reality is I think this is where both parties in New Jersey have come to an agreement, whether it's giving licenses to undocumented immigrants or, you know, providing some sort of, you know, funding for whether it is for higher education. This is where the people of New Jersey have decided through their representation that this is an important issue, and, you know, they have, you know, they have decided to pass laws on this very topic. I just think that this is something that's not very controversial in New Jersey. Maybe for our parents' generation, they might, you know, there may be concerned, you know, why are we spending our tax dollars to this? But you know what? When they came to the United States back in the, you know, at the early 60s, I imagine that prior generation of, you know, U.S. citizens were probably wondering the same thing. Why are we coddling these, you know, refugees from Cuba? You know, it's not our fault that their government went to, you know, went bad or has a dictator named Fidel Castro. I mean, I think this is just something that's very cyclical, and it just happens. And, you know, you and I can disagree about how we spend our tax dollars in Trenton, but I think the reality is that the people of New Jersey have spoken on this issue.
Well, they have, and I think that, to be fair, I mean, obviously we all know that sometimes while the people have spoken and voted, it may not always necessarily be the right decision, right? I mean, I think that's where we get into this dissecting policy and dissecting, you know, the way that we approach either topics like immigration. You mentioned infrastructure as well here in New Jersey. And you're right. Listen, New Jersey is a very diverse state. New Jersey prides itself on perhaps being one of the most diverse states in the country. We have the most diverse colleges and universities. We have a lot of diversity in government, whether at the municipal level and at the state level, even at the federal level. And, you know, it still sort of begs the question, though, Councillor, that, you know, while times change and we know that the message changes, I think sometimes, too, you know, whether it's someone of my parents' age demographic or even a little bit younger, you know, people along our age demographic, you know, oftentimes, you know, this remains a really polarizing issue. And, you know, case in point, when we look at New Jersey residents, and you're right, obviously, you know, we vote and we send who we send to Trenton to represent us and to vote on policy. And I think oftentimes we become sort of reminded that oftentimes Trenton can be a little dysfunctional, right? And, you know, when we bring this up, for example, how our tax dollars are spent, you know, unfortunately, I think it becomes a very polarizing issue where if you dare to say something, you know, you're labeled a racist or a xenophobe or a bigot or anti-immigrant. I think there's room to dissect bad policy without automatically being vilified for it. I think that's a big concern, I think, as a journalist that I have when I discuss these issues openly and not just on this show, but other shows, Counselor.
Well, yeah, and look, I mean, I'm aware and I'm cognizant that immigration is a very polarizing issue. I think one of the things is that you got to look at the, you know, why would somebody be against a certain policy? For example, the driver's license, giving the driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants here in New Jersey. You know, I think in our, you know, you and I have done a podcast in the past where I indicated to you, look, the reason I support it and I supported the legislation was on the basis of public safety. I think that regardless of what your immigration status is, that if the the government, the state government, decides to bestow a privilege of driving to you, you know, that you want people on the road to be safe. You want people to, you know, have driver's license, have insurance. That's what I care about. I want to make sure. But also at the same token is that you have to be aware that there are folks that need to go to work, and you want them to provide for their families. We just don't want, you know, I would say, you know, we want people to be empowered to work for themselves, get a job, provide for their own families instead of, let's say, you know, feeding, you know, quote unquote, feeding off the system. And I think you can't criticize somebody or, you know, I would say a legislator for supporting a bill like that, but at the same time say, well, you know, I want to dismantle welfare or dismantle this, but you're not willing to provide, you know, some sort of, you know, a benefit to a group of people so that they can provide for themselves. If you don't want to bestow to them, let's say, some sort of, you know, legal status, right? Or you can't because you're not the federal government. The one thing, you have to look at the common good. And that's, you and I have always discussed this whole thing, and you and I disagree on, you know, what is the common good for society? And this is all theoretical, and, you know, you and I can talk about this for hours. But for me, as a citizen of and a resident of New Jersey, I think it's really important for the common good of all residents of New Jersey that we provide undocumented individuals with driver's license, so that they can provide for their families, themselves, you know, work and be active and productive members of society. I think that's what we look for. That's what we, you know, we expect of, you know, of everybody that's in our state, you know, that they could be active members of society. And, you know, I mean, that's my personal position on that. I just don't think we should just be, you know, look, it's case by case, it's state by state, and you know, we can disagree on the nitty gritty on, you know, whether we should spend X amount for, you know, funding and, you know, let's say some sort of legal defense fund from undocumented immigrants. We can discuss that. That we can discuss. But something as simple as providing driver's license, I don't think that there's really much to debate about there.
Well, let me ask you this, though, because, and again, I'm glad you brought up driver's licenses. We know that it was passed by the legislature and signed by Governor Murphy, to no one's surprise, last year. I'm sorry, at the end of 2019. It was due to take effect in January of 2021, obviously due to the pandemic. A lot of things in Trenton started moving slowly. That has been delayed. I mean, we know that activist groups are up in arms about this. I mean, and I think that sometimes, you know, due to the pandemic and due to what's going on, I think that sometimes what rubs me the wrong way, for example, is that these activist groups almost are symptomatic of, like, this mentality we live in, counselor, though, about, like, everything has to be now, yeah, you know, like, now. And it's almost like, well, okay, again, we're still experiencing a pandemic. We know that things in Trenton, listen, pre-COVID, things in Trenton moved at a snail's pace anyway, and now even more so. And, you know, the idea about licenses, yes, it got signed. It's the letter of the law. It was due to take effect in January. It has not happened yet. But I think sometimes, too, what rubs people like me the wrong way, journalists like myself and commentators, is I think sometimes these activist groups have unrealistic expectations of when these measures are supposed to take effect. And I'm sorry, Carolina, you know, and I'm going to say this openly, but there are just more pressing things on people's plates right now in New Jersey, whether it's vaccine rollouts or other things. You know, accommodating these activist groups and whether or not illegal immigrants are getting driver's licenses, I mean, that's not high on my agenda right now, and I think a lot of people in New Jersey feel the same way.
Well, I mean, listen, the law, that legislation passed for the driver's license, it's going to roll out, I believe, now in May of 2021. Honestly, and also we also gave, professional licenses as well to immigrants.
Yeah.
So, look, there's a reason behind it, and the reason is that activists have been pushing for this legislation because, you know what, they know it will pass, and it did pass, and it was signed into law. And I think that, you know, you personally may not think that that's a priority. However, you know what, you and I understand that certain things will, you know, get through both houses of the legislature and then to the governor's desk and will pass. And other times some things won't. And right now, the political desire or the capital that we have in Trenton is that, you know, this is where both parties can, you know, both agree, and this is something that can be signed into law. Now, listen, there are other issues that are just as important. However, understand that from the immigration standpoint, the last time from at the federal level that we've had like major, you know, comprehensive immigration reform was back in 1986 under President Ronald Reagan. So activists are not going to give up because, look, the world that we're living in today, Fernando, is very different from the world that you and I grew up as kids in 1986. A lot more people are coming to the United States. There's a lot of, you know, I would say, you know, economic strife in other parts of the world. Political, you know, political power is shifting in whether it's South America, Central America, and other parts of the world. And that's causing, you know, a lot of the pull and the pull pressure that you see with immigration now. And immigration, I think, is going to still be at the forefront given the pandemic. I mean, look, we've lost over 500,000 individuals due to the pandemic. I read a statistic somewhere that annually we usually, you know, both with legal and undocumented immigration, just to replace the labor market, you know, just to meet our needs, right, in the United States, we need like 800,000 immigrants, okay, just to keep our economy going. Okay, so we've lost like 500,000 people and counting due to COVID. You know, I think immigration personally will be the solution to us, you know, really catapulting the United States forward as we get out of this pandemic. I mean, we've lost a lot of life. We need a lot of individuals in certain sectors of the economy, especially in healthcare. Frontline workers, nurses, and other professional staff in that field. So I think that immigration right now, even though you may personally or others that listen to your show might think this is not as important, it's just as important as any other issue. You know, stopping the pandemic, getting rid of COVID. Focusing on our infrastructure here in the United States. It's just as important because they're part of our labor market. They are part, you know, immigrants live amongst us. I mean, they're here. No matter what you want to say, no matter how many walls we build, no matter the hurdles we create in the law or, you know, immigrants will come to the United States, both legally and across the border without papers as well. I mean, like I keep saying to you, we are still, you know, the perception around the world is we are that beacon of freedom. We are the promised land for economic opportunity.
Oh, no, I'm with you. And again, being children of immigrants, I think we know that firsthand. But, and again, let's sort of look at it, you know, and again, the show is politically direct, obviously, so there's going to be a political component to the discussion. But again, Carolina, all your points are valid, and I don't disagree with you. But again, at the end of the day, it's about the optics. It's about the optics of, I get it, we're still that beacon of freedom and opportunity to the world. I think to a lot of, but I think there's still a notion out there that, you know, it's also not our responsibility either as a country, I think any sovereign country, to be exhausting resources the way we are. And I think, you know, again, it's, you know, whether it's someone of my parents' age demographic or younger or even younger than that. And again, this shouldn't be a political issue, but the notion of, you know, how concerned we should be about exhausting resources and whether or not we're appropriated to the right avenues. Listen, again, I'm the child of immigrants. I understand the immigrant experience better than anybody. But at the same token, too, again, you know me, I'm a policy nerd. I'm all about policy. I'm also about the idea. What's that?
No, understood, but I just to interject, I think, sure. Look, whether you're spending the money, if the immigrant is here, okay, you know, look, at the end of the day, we're going to have to spend money, right? So,
sure.
And if it's not with, if the person is here, if the immigrant is here, and we're going to figure out a way for them to naturalize or how we give them confer any kind of benefits and privileges, we're spending money, right? But, you know, if you don't, if you want to create these borders, like let's say this border security, and which I'm not against, you know, I'm not all about open borders personally. I'm about border security, and I'm about following the law, and I'm about the rules and the regulations. Okay. However, one thing as an immigration practitioner, and I've had this discussion with you, if you want to solve the problem with immigration, there's other things that we need to address. You know, we need to address our foreign policy. Our foreign policy relations with certain nations. So where is the influx of immigrants coming right now? The Northern Triangle, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. If the concern by conservatives or even Democrats, liberals, is, you know, how do we, you know, sort of, you know, control, you know, the flow of immigrants coming here, we need to look at what is our policy to certain nations. What's going on in those countries? What are those countries lacking? Maybe we need to create some sort of Marshall Plan or some sort of package, something that can focus on so keeping those individuals there. Because a lot of the reasons people come here is due to economic reasons or political reasons. I mean, just recently the Biden administration has, you know, designated temporary protected status for Venezuelans. And even before President Biden, you know, President Trump, right before he left office, you know, did some sort of deferred action for Venezuelans. Why? Because of what is going on in that country politically. Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, we can address the problem by, you know, giving them TPS, or we can do something different, whether it's engage in foreign relations, you know, with Venezuela directly, you know, or do something. I'm not trying to say, you know, one approach is better than the other, but I think you can't look at the immigration issue without looking at what we are doing politically, globally. And it influences a lot why there is these ebbs and flows from certain countries of, you know, of immigrants. And on top of that, you have to look at what's going on in the labor market. I mean, there's immigration is an area of the law which is, you know, is impacted by various other areas as well. And you have to look at even as something, you know, something that you, I know you, a topic that you have talked about has been, you know, drugs, right? You know, the legalization of certain kinds of substances, controlled substances like marijuana. I mean, part of the reason why people are coming to the United States is that they're, you know, being pressured by, you know, these gangs that are selling drugs, and they're, you know, and they're fleeing their home countries because they're being threatened in their home country by these, you know, very violent gangs to sell, you know, drugs. And so I think a lot of it depends on, you look, we're going to spend money as a nation. It depends where we're going to spend the money and how we're spending it. And if you want to spend it on solving the problem at the genesis, which is in their home country, well, then we should do that, okay? Or if you're not going to do that and you don't want to engage in foreign relations like a country like El Salvador and really stop the problem of the gangs in El Salvador, then you're going to have to address it when the individuals are here. And what have we done? We've granted TPS to temporary protected status El Salvadorians for several years now, and we've renewed it. And for a whole host of reasons, not only politically, but also due to, natural disasters as well. So we're going to spend money, Fernando. I think it's just, you know, where we want to allocate those resources.
Well, listen, I'm with you. And I think, you know, it's important to have a really legitimate and important policy discussion when it comes to this, because that's the only way, you know, we'll get to the heart of the problem and we'll get to the root solution, I'm hoping. And again, as a policy nerd, it's something that I always welcome. But it just seems that whether it's at the state level or especially at the federal level, because that's where it's all governed, it just seems like this becomes overly politicized and continues to drag out when it comes to enacting a policy that's going to be beneficial for all parties, right? Regardless of what the letter is next to the person's name or what ideology, you know, you subscribe to, I think it's about getting to the heart of the matter. And it just seems like we're nowhere closer today than we were 5, 10, 15 years ago. And it just becomes frustrating to talk about because all it becomes is that, a talking point. We'll get to that back in a minute, but I wanted to share with our audience today at least a little bit of the inner workings of what you do, Counselor, when it comes to not just your law practice, but immigration law in general. Has it become a more expensive endeavor for those that are here that are undocumented, or people that are residents, or people that have working visas, or people that have green cards? How much more expensive is the process becoming for them to stay in this country? And never mind the fact of seeking legal counsel. I mean, that in itself can be costly. But how much more expensive, if anything, is it to, again, be able to seek citizenship in the United States currently?
So I would say that given the last administration, which created a lot more hurdles, it became more complex for folks, even, let's say, without legal counsel, because, you know, there was at a time there was the prior administration was going to increase fees. They were making it difficult for folks that did not meet certain income requirements to apply for fee waivers. So immigrants would have to, you know, actually pay for their applications instead of obtaining some sort of fee waiver. So not only is it just, you know, just income limitations, but also just the prior administration made it more difficult for immigrants, certain immigrants, to find legal options of relief, basically to stay here in the United States. So, you know, it has become expensive for whether it's going to a nonprofit or going to a private lawyer for immigrants to sort of, you know, to have representation that, you know, adequate representation so that they could stay here. Because the laws of immigration have changed so much in the last 4 years that it's impossible to navigate the system by yourself. You need to have somebody who is, you know, trained in the immigration laws, like myself or my colleagues. And even so, even us immigration lawyers, you know, if it wasn't for the private bar, if it wasn't for the American Immigration Lawyers Association, I don't know how all of us would have survived the last 4 years, because the amount of changes, the amount of litigation that has been done by immigration advocates against the prior administration regarding certain aspects of the Immigration and Nationality Act and just even basic case law has been enormous. So, you know, you need somebody that is highly trained in this area. And that's why, you know, a lot of, you know, clients that I had in the last 4 years were spending a lot of money. They were either going, you know, they were trying to do it cheaply by going to notarios, and you know what a notario is, but for your audience, you know, these are people that proclaim to be immigration consultants. They're not lawyers. They may be paralegals. They may be just somebody who's being nice, but, or maybe charging for a service, and at a smaller fee, cheaper than a lawyer, let's say, they were doing paperwork for immigrants, and they don't know the immigration laws. They can't represent them in court. They can't represent them before United States Citizenship and Immigration Services. So a lot of these immigrants would find themselves in the legal bind and get into trouble. They find themselves in detention because they were being, you know, they were obtaining advice from somebody who was not a lawyer. And so it definitely has become costly for a lot of my clients where, you know, they went to this notario. But also it's just, you know, it's just the last 4 years have been it's complicated things. Also the pandemic recently. I think the pandemic has taken a huge hit, has hit the immigrant population significantly. And, you know, that affects them tremendously, especially, and it has affected everyone, but also the way government has operated. With the pandemic, USCIS has not been processing applications as efficiently as they should be, like before. And I would say that this started pretty much prior to the presidential election of last year, that we were getting, you know, there were, you know, most immigration practitioners were seeing delays in processing. And that has had a huge impact in the immigrant community because you're not getting your work authorizations, you're not getting your green cards, you're not getting your visas in time. And so that has cost a lot of immigrants, whether both legal, you know, legal immigrants and undocumented immigrants, a lot of time and money in, you know, adjusting their status or getting some sort of relief in court.
Well, listen, and again, you're a wealth of information, because for our audience here, it's important to really break this down, because it's not as simple as, you know, this isn't ABCs, okay? It's not general math, okay? It's not, you know, basic math 101. I mean, this is extensive, and this is really, really, I think, something that becomes an important resource for our audience, and I think for anyone in general, because of your law practice and how visible you are as a figure in the legal community. And we'll get back to the practice itself in a moment, but I wanted to pick your brain about this, because it was being discussed in the legislature. I talked about it on my local podcast as well as my other studio shows, and it was a big topic of discussion at the end of last year. Carolina, we know that in Hudson County, for example, the Board of Chosen Freeholders, well, commissioners now, whatever, it's like, seems like it's renamed all the time. But the bottom line is that apparently the Board of Freeholders had addressed an ICE contract that was under a lot of scrutiny. We know that they chose to renew it with the federal government. We know that it brought out a lot of progressive groups out with, you know, their usual bitching and moaning that they do. And I talked about it on the air a lot, not just on this podcast, but other programs. And, you know, we saw legislators, we saw the county executive in Hudson County being vilified. We saw the freeholders being vilified. And apparently now in Trenton, there is a bill being discussed in the state assembly to, I believe, and I'm just looking at my notes here, to discourage counties from signing contracts with ICE anyway. And my position is this, and this is where, again, you know, we talk off the air a lot. This is where I come up with my material for the social justice clowns, the woke fools, the compassion mongers that seem to think that vilifying legislators or trying to pressure them into making sure that ICE contracts are not renewed, the first and foremost thing I tell people is, well, understand that people that are being held in custody now, for example, in Hudson County, in Kearney at the county jail, are people that either have family nearby, have legal counsel nearby that are helping them with their cases. What good does it do to cancel contracts, which, by the way, the jails are not as full now when it comes to ICE detainees, so there are less people in custody. But what good does it do to cancel these contracts and move these people to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, or Toledo, Ohio, or, God forbid, Reno, Nevada? It just doesn't do any good. And it seems like sometimes when we see these progressive groups, you know, either petitioning or boycotting or protesting in front of people's homes, you know, county executives, et cetera, it just seems like they lose the forest from the trees where, and I say this on the air all the time, it's like, yeah, you know what, you say your heart's in the right place, but your head's up your ass, I'm sorry, when it comes to the outcry and backlash you're trying to portray. And I just think they're losing sight of what these contracts mean, Carolina. I know you have a position on this. I really want to hear your thoughts on this.
So, look. So the sort of the end ICE contract movement. I think that this is where I'm torn with this issue. Okay, from the perception of the client. Okay. Is I think one of the things that, you know, and I represent detained immigrants not only in Bergen County, but also in Essex County and Hudson County that are detained in those facilities. You know, I think from their perspective is, you know, what they complain to me about is in general is just, you know, treatment within those facilities and just the quality of the services that they get, okay? Whether it may be food, medical attention, that's one of the biggest complaints, okay? And I've been to detention centers, ICE detention centers in other parts of the United States, in the South in particular. So I have a point of comparison, and I've been to those facilities. So from the point of the immigrant that's being detained, you know, they would want to have their legal counsel close. It does not benefit the detainee to have to be transferred to Pennsylvania or upstate New York and not be able to have access to their local legal counsel. And that for me is one of the biggest reasons why I am against the, you know, the end the ICE contracts, because you're not solving immediately the issue at hand. Okay, you're not addressing the real problem, which is the problem is treatment in the facilities. Okay, what is the quality of services and treatment at those facilities? And my argument to immigration advocates that are very passionate about ending ICE detention centers, you know,
You're being kind.
And I know these individuals, and I have respect for them for what they do. I disagree with them on certain points. But if you're so passionate about this, I would ask you to also advocate for the other detainees, those people who are common criminals that are not ICE detainees, and say, look, holistically, in general, maybe at X facility, you know, there's an issue with healthcare treatment, or there's an issue with the food service. Okay, I would say advocate for all detainees, regardless of whether you're being detained by ICE or you're being detained by, you know, the state of New Jersey. Okay, because I think this is a systemic problem. Okay, when it comes to ending the notion of, you know, ICE contracts, I think people need to step back and understand that the folks that are being detained are individuals that have been under ICE detention centers. They either have been, you know, charged and sentenced with certain crimes, okay? And we can, you and I can disagree whether somebody that has committed, who has been sentenced, or, you know, has had two DWIs, should be detained in ICE custody. You and I can go back and forth about that. And there's, you know, in under the immigration code, that somebody's like that is considered a public safety threat, okay? We can go back and dispute over whether certain, you know, discuss about whether certain crimes should, you know, should cause somebody to be deportable or inadmissible, okay? We can talk about that. But
sure.
The reality is we got to take the code the way it is and the case law, and these people are being detained for a reason. They're being detained because they either committed a crime or they've been charged with a crime. So it could be domestic violence, it could be for DWI, it could be for something very serious as murder, okay? So we're not talking about, you know, the immigrant woman that is, you know, she's, you know, elderly, she's in her late 60s, she's been in the United States for 20 years and hasn't committed a crime. We're not talking about that person. We're talking about somebody that has either been charged with a crime, okay, and they're waiting for their hearing in criminal court, in state court, and they've been taken into ICE custody based upon the nature of the offense, or they have been convicted of a crime, okay? And I think immigration advocates, you know, the majority of them are aware of this, but for your audience, so that they're aware of the concept. So when we're talking about end ICE contracts, I'm not all about ending ICE contracts, because there needs to be some sort of system to house, process, and, you know, some sort of mechanism so that ICE, Immigration and Control and Enforcement, can house very dangerous individuals, okay, especially those convicted of crimes, okay? If the discussion wants to be about, well, we shouldn't be, you know, I shouldn't be detaining folks that have pending charges, that's a separate issue. That's something that immigration advocates and even lawyers can advocate at the national level, and that's where I would say put your time and energy in that, right? But ending ICE contracts, let's go to the practical notion. The reality is the county has their own budget. And the question is, they're getting pressure from their constituents in the county. Do we raise taxes or how do we lower taxes?
This is a way, and
I'm not saying that, listen, it's county by county. We have 21 counties in the state of New Jersey. Every county is different. And it really depends. And I come from a county. I live in Bergen County. I work in Bergen County. And I think this is, we have primarily mostly like a Democratic freeholders in our county. And I think this is an issue that
Same here.
You know,
same here.
They're struggling with this issue. On the one hand, they're like, you know, we understand your concerns about, you know, you don't want the detainee to move out of the county because the family's here and stuff like that. But at the same time, there's the budgetary aspect, the fiscal aspect, right? And so I think, you know, until we as a nation are ready to have a very candid and conversation about comprehensive immigration reform, about, the, you know, maybe immigration reform in the context of detainees, I think it's going to be really hard to say close, you know, stop these counties from, you know, signing these agreements with ICE, because the reality is that they're getting pressure. They're getting pressure from taxpayers about saving dollars because prices are going up in New Jersey. And I know that's another topic for another one of your guests. But, you know, I think that it's a really hard decision that our freeholders are trying to make, and trying to, you know, they're trying to address the needs of the immigration advocate community. And I think the best way to answer their question is, you know, let's improve treatment of detainees, and not only just immigration detainees, but overall all detainees, you know, or even just common prisoners. I think that's what's really important. And I think that's what we shouldn't lose focus on, is really, you know, we should strive to treat our incarcerated prisoners mm-hmm. much better than they are right now. So that's where mm-hmm. I see that, you know, the improvements can be. I think it's going to be really hard to go back to your taxpayers and say to them, listen, we're going to give up the size contract, and now you're going to have to pay more money. I think that's the hard discussion that Democrats, especially in this state, are having mm-hmm. with their constituents.
No, I agree with you, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because I've talked about this at the local level here in Hudson County. Just like Bergen, it's predominantly a very heavily Democratic run county. And, you know, one of the things that the chairman of the Freeholder Board said very clearly is, listen, we're not getting what we used to get from the federal government per detainee when it comes to those in custody. And, you know, we have to sort of sit down and assess. And this is what drives me crazy about these liberal and progressive groups, is they, you know, they'll bitch and moan at these freeholder meetings. If you go online, and for my audience, if you haven't had a chance, go on YouTube and check out the latest freeholder meetings from December. I mean, these were 10-hour meetings during the public portion when residents came up and were lambasting the freeholders. And my response was like, you know what, at the end of the day, if this revenue is not coming in, it doesn't take a PhD in economics, folks, to understand that the freeholders are going to raise taxes. And then it's these same progressive groups where they're insufferable as it is, that are going to bitch and moan that, oh, well, taxes went up. Maybe the sales tax went up in parts of the county, or other things went up, or other services went up in terms of cost. Well, guess what? You know, again, you don't need a PhD in economics to understand that this is the way government works. If revenue is missing, you have to make up for it somehow. And I think that's what bothers me a lot about this discussion, is I think people, again, you know, as I've said on the air, and we'll talk about this when you're on my other show later next month, but, you know, yeah, your heart's in the right place. But again, it seems like a lot of people just have their head up their ass when it comes to really understanding governing. And I think that's the frustrating part, Carolina, when it comes to this.
Well, I don't want to cast, you know, you may want to say call them progressives or conservative groups or whatever. Look, I think that there's a lot of special interest groups out there on both sides of the spectrum that influence this issue on immigration. You know, both, you know, and I think that some, I want to say that some come from a good place, others not. And you know, just mm-hmm. on the flip side, like you mentioned, progressive groups being insufferable and all that stuff. At the same time, I would have to say, in all fairness, there have been conservative groups that have been very, you know, supportive of the prior administration's, you know, very anti-immigrant rhetoric, and something that, you know, it isn't discussed really. And we don't see that much in here in New Jersey, but I would say that, and something that you haven't asked me, and I do want to bring it up, is that the fact is, I think with immigration, we cannot forget that a lot of the animus, the hostility towards immigration comes from us as a nation not acknowledging or accepting the fact that we're becoming browner. We're not as white as as we were before. And I think that's where we see a lot of this tension, a lot of the sort of us versus them mentality. And I think that that's something that, you know, we haven't discussed that in previous talks, but I think that I can't, as an immigration advocate and a lawyer, you know, the hostility that, you know, that I see that in the, during the prior administration and even and now some, you know, with some other groups and stuff is sort of this us versus them. You know, why are we letting these people in? We have to be cognizant of that, that we are changing as a nation. We're no longer, you know, we don't look like what we looked like maybe 20 years ago. Our demographics are different. We're changing.
Yeah, yeah.
We're becoming a very multiracial, multi-ethnic United States. And I think that the election of the current president, Biden, basically demonstrated that, that, you know, the country has changed and the narrative is starting to change. And then, you know, we had not only the pandemic, and not only have we still been under the pandemic, but then we had the series of you know, whether, you know, protests along with because of the George Floyd incident that occurred, that, you know, you're going to see this, the topic of immigration, racial justice intertwined along with economic issues going forward. And I think immigration is will always be a political issue, Fernando. I don't think it's ever going to, it always, by nature, it always is, because everything we do, what Congress does, what the president does, regardless of whether he's a conservative or a liberal, it is always will be political in nature. Who we designate, which country we designate temporary protected status is something that the president, you know, that it's all political in nature. It's based upon what's going on in our foreign policy, you know, what's going on in the world at the time. So I think it's hard to separate immigration from politics, and it's hard to separate immigration from the economics. It really is. I think they're all intertwined.
No, well said. Well said. Before I let you go, Counselor, you've been, again, a wealth of information. I know you've had a busy day. I know you're not going to stop working, obviously, after today's appearance on the podcast. But I want to thank you for your time today, because you're always just an invaluable guest. You really helped break this down. You're a fellow Rutgers alumnus, so I already know you're intelligent and well-spoken. So that goes without saying. But, again, you know, you're certainly a credit to what you're doing in the legal community. You know, we talk off the air a lot, obviously. We'll, you know, we'll agree or disagree on a lot of things politically and policy-wise, but the one thing I know I'm confident in is I know your heart's in the right place. You're working hard for marginalized people, and I think that's something that often goes overlooked, especially in your business and what you're doing. So I want to thank you for your time, and again, for respecting Politically Direct via Insider NJ. I'll give you the last word, Counselor.
The last word, Fernando, is thank you for inviting me on Politically Direct. It was a pleasure as always. And I guess for your audience is, look, immigration is a very complex area of the law. You know, feel free to reach out to an immigration lawyer. Don't do it by yourself. However, you know, look, you really educate yourself. You really want to read, you know, read politics, read economics. I mean, it's a very complex area. And honestly, I love doing what I do, servicing the community that I serve. I'm the daughter of immigrants. I know you are the son of immigrants as well. And look, we all, you know, no matter where we come from, we all have different views on things, you know, both politically and, you know, and I appreciate, you know, our discussion, Fernando, even though sometimes we get heated and we might disagree and we might want to, you know, drink each other at times or, you know, and, you know, you like to, you know, you like to tease me and say my middle name. But, you know, look, that's what makes America great. And what makes America great is that we are a diverse nation, and we're becoming even more diverse. And that's the beauty of our friendship professionally, is that, you know, we can agree to disagree, and we can still have un cafecito together and not kill each other, okay? So thank you so much.
Absolutely. I can't say the same for a lot of people on your social media, but you know, when it comes to you, you're a peach. Your heart's in the right place. You're working hard. stay safe out there. I look forward to talking to you next month on Real Talk via Zoom, StreamYard. So that'll be interesting as well. But thank you so much for appearing today. And the episode will be on the Insider NJ website later today. So please plug it and please tell people you know, obviously, how much you love Politically Direct. And certainly this was a wonderful experience. I look forward to having you back on again soon. Counselor, stay healthy. God bless you. And I'll talk to you soon.
Great. Speak to you soon. Take care. Thank you.
Have a good one.
Folks, you too. Take care, Fernando.
Absolutely. Folks, what a great episode today with immigration attorney and activist Carolina Teresa Carvalho here today on the podcast. You heard it yourself. She is a wealth of information. She is someone that, you know, without a doubt is someone who's really invested in doing good work. And that's the thing about this topic, folks, where oftentimes we don't realize how complicated this is, how difficult and laborious this type of work can be. Because, folks, at the end of the day, you know, you're looking at this from a prism of, you know, whether you're the son or daughter of immigrants or not. I mean, this is an issue that continues to get a lot of traction. It's an issue that continues to get a lot of attention. And especially for programs like this, or other online, you know, media apparatuses in New Jersey, understand that this is where we are at right now. This is where we are at as a community of professionals that are talking about this. And folks, at the end of the day, you know, we look at this from the perspective of, you know, that it is fulfilling to discuss. And again, you know, for anyone who knows me off the air and knows my rapport with Carolina Carvalho, I mean, she's a great person, and her heart's in the right place as she's doing what is very difficult work. Okay, any type of legal work is demanding, but now more than ever, this administration, the previous administration, or the administration before that, you know, immigration law continues to evolve. Immigration law continues to be challenging, and again, I thank her for coming on today because it's not easy. It's not something you just learn about in 2 hours. It's not going to Barnes & Noble's, picking up a book and reading about it. Oh, okay, now you're the first and foremost authority when it comes to immigration law. No, folks, it's changing. It's evolving. It's something that is extremely, as I said before, challenging. It's great to have a guest on like her today on the podcast to really help us break it down at all levels, right? Not just from a legalistic perspective, but socioeconomic and even cultural discussions that tend to go on because of immigration. So, again, a shout-out to her for the good job today. Well, folks, that's our show for this week here. And certainly we appreciate you tuning in here via insidernj.com/podcast. And without a doubt, you'll be able to listen to this episode in its entirety, as well as all my other episodes. Once again, by going to www.insidernj.com/podcast, you'll obviously hear today's episode and all the other ones in 2021 and all the ones since its inception. Right. And, you know, 3 years ago, and obviously 3 awards later, Politically Direct is as hard-hitting and as relevant in the city of New Jersey as any other podcast, if not the most perennial podcast in the Garden State. So if you have any suggestions or for guests or for topics, folks, don't hesitate. Write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I do make it a point to answer your emails, and I'll make sure to get back to you as quickly as I can. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, folks, at politicallydirectnj, and also hit me up on my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. And, you know, it's really a testament to how much you enjoy this program. I love the just the support that I'm getting from people every day, the new follows, the tons of likes. I mean, it's a testament to you, the audience, how loyal you are and how much you respect this program as well as my other online programs and just my brand overall here in the state of New Jersey. So, again, I thank you for that. Hit me up on Twitter when you can, folks. No Filter Uribe. Also, check out Politically Direct on Facebook. Now, again, I'm still suspended on Facebook, or fascist book, as I like to call them. But while I'm still serving my 30-day suspension, you can still check out Politically Direct on Facebook, like it, share it on your wall, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, Insider NJ brings you the best journalism anywhere in the Garden State. No one does it better And you can always check out www.insidernj.com for the best journalism, again, in the state of New Jersey. I can't say enough about how proud I am to be a part of the Insider NJ family. It starts with the Graham family, and I want to thank them for their ongoing support of the podcast, especially Mike Graham, who, again, is a big fan of the show, is a guy that really takes the time to show his support for me, and I'm grateful to him. I'm grateful to my GM, Pete Onelia, who I oftentimes get a headache to, and of course he gets a lot of headaches because of this podcast, but it remains reputable. Again, folks, 3 years in counting and 3 awards in counting. Hey, the proof is in the pudding. You know, I'm a sports guy. I'm all about stats. Well, I'm putting up the stats. I'm giving you traffic. I'm giving you good content. And I'm producing. I'm performing. That's, at the end of the day, that's what I'm doing every week here, folks, on InsiderNJ.com/podcast. So, again, I want to thank the InsiderNJ family. Obviously, I work with some great people, starting with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro. Not a fan of his political views at all, but he's an exceptional journalist. His columns are amazing. They're very interesting and informative, so you definitely want to check them out there. In addition to the other great columnists that I work with here on Insider NJ, certainly Alan Steinberg, who, again, gets a little too left for me, but he's a good guy, and he's a regular now on the podcast. He's a monthly contributor here on the show, so I always look forward to having Alan on and having lively discussions. Certainly Fred Snowflack, an amazing writer. I mean, if you haven't caught his columns lately, folks, on Insider NJ, do that, because he's just an amazing writer. Jay Lassiter, too, you know, I don't really care for Jay personally, and I know the feeling is mutual, but he's an amazing journalist. He's a great writer, certainly has great sources, and is able to really give you compelling journalism every single week via Insider NJ. So, again, I don't get along with everybody that I work with, but I guess there's a healthy respect there. I don't know, maybe. And if there isn't, that's okay. You know, I sleep well at night either way. So, but again, I'm proud to be a part of the Insider NJ family. So do check out the website, www.insidernj.com. And once you go on it, you'll see the subscribe button on the upper right-hand corner. Click on it, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So when you wake up in the morning and you're going through your phone, your tablet, or your Mac or PC, guess what? When you're checking your email, the morning intelligence briefing will be right there waiting for you. Folks, there's a reason why Insider NJ is the number one source for political news and for the best journalism in the Garden State. No one does it better, folks, than Insider NJ. Once again, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and, of course, follow them on Twitter. And, you know, hey, they're doing great work, and I'm proud to be a part of Insider NJ. Again, folks, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's our show for this week here. And, again, just as a special programming note, we got some great guests coming up in the next few weeks here. Next week we'll be having Save Jersey publisher Matt Rooney. He's one of the more preeminent conservative commentators in the state of New Jersey. I look forward to having him on the podcast. We have some other great guests coming up as well, which include, again, Insider NJ columnist Alan Steinberg, and other legislative candidates here in 2021. So you want to definitely stay tuned for that. So again, ladies and gentlemen, I can't say enough about how grateful I am to all of you. You're the ones that keep making Politically Direct successful. So I love you all. Thank you so much. Again, folks, enjoy this beautiful weather we're going to have this weekend, as April is right around the corner. And hey, warm weather is around the corner. That means that, man, we'll be outside. And you know what? Maybe we're getting back to some sense of normalcy after this past year. And God knows we need it. So folks, stay healthy, stay safe, stay alive, and look after your loved ones, look after your family members, especially the elderly. And folks, remember, it's real. It's here. It's the 3-time award-winning Politically Direct. Good night. Allendale, great town in Bergen County. To all my good people out there in Allendale, God bless you all. Folks, again, please party responsibly. And I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
you.